Ruth chapter 2. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favour." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She's the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favour in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favour in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, put out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about one epa. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I work with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead," she added. "That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to be at church with you all. If we haven't met, and we may not meet again, my name is Eric. How do you get started on your final sermon? Well, I found this joke book floating around the church office. The Politically Incorrect Joke Book. So this one's for you, Alex. I highlighted three jokes that are possibly passable in our hearing. One of them I did this morning and John said, "Never will you do that again." So I shall not, but I might in my last sermon. How about this one? The minister's term at his church was up and it was about to be transferred. The regular members had gathered for a tea party in his honour. "We will really miss you," said one little old lady. "No matter who they send as a replacement, he will never be as good as you." The minister was flattered, but he assured her his successor would be an adequate and caring pastor. "No, no," she said. "It's always the same. We've had 6 ministers here in my time, and I can assure you that each one has been worse than the one before." Okay. You guys are a tougher crowd than the other parts of the church. That's okay. How about this one? A drunk boarded the train and plonked himself beside the minister and began to read the paper. He looks up after a bit of time and says, "Tell me, Rev, what causes arthritis?" It was just the opening the minister wanted. "I tell you what causes arthritis, my little man. It's immoral living, too much drinking and smoking, and no doubt the sins of your flesh. How long have you had it?" "Oh, no, it's not me, Rev," said the drunk. "It says here the Archbishop's got it." Okay. This is my last sermon here to you. What you might be asking, what on earth did that have to do with the sermon? And I always say, not much. But this is my last sermon here to you. And I want to come clean that when John said, "Hey, you're preaching from Ruth chapter 2, I looked at him and said, "You're kidding me, right? Last sermon, final time to talk to the church, and you want me to preach about Ruth and Boaz and a field." Okay. So last week I was having a look at it, and I was praying about it. And to be honest, I actually feel what the story has in it has some very useful things and very positive things that I could say as a final sermon to you. So let's get cracking. If you have your Bibles open in front of you, that'd be great. We're at Ruth chapter 2. And to give a bit of the catch up from last week in Ruth chapter 1, it started off about Naomi. She was from a little town called Bethlehem, around about 1,000 years before Jesus was born. Now, Naomi grew up in that town. She married a man named Elimelech. But there was a severe famine in the whole country. So Elimelech takes Naomi and their 2 sons, and they go to the land of Moab. Now that was a disaster because Moab was full of people who God had warned the Israelites not to hang around with. But Elimelech still went there, and things went from bad to worse. You see, Elimelech, he died. A little while later, the 2 sons died, and then Naomi was left with only her 2 daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. When news came that food was good back in Israel, Naomi decided to go home to Bethlehem. Only Ruth, one of the daughters-in-law, returns with Naomi, and they return to Bethlehem in hope of getting food and putting their lives back together the best way they could. That's the background of Ruth chapter 2. So let's pick up the story from verse 1 of chapter 2. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. So we begin by meeting Boaz. He's described as a relative of Naomi's husband. He's also described as a man of standing, which is literally a mighty man of character. Now, he's also a man of prominence in the community. And this is an important detail because Ruth and Naomi, as they return to Bethlehem, they don't have anything. They don't have heirs or husbands or sons to carry on the family tradition. They don't even have social security. But they do have this relative. And it's obvious from what we read next that they don't even have food. Let's see from verse 2. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean the fields behind the harvesters. And as it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. So Ruth goes out deciding, oh, she wants to go and glean in the fields. And gleaning is a common custom in the Old Testament. In fact, God even built that idea of gleaning a field into the Old Testament laws of Moses. In Leviticus 23, he writes, "And when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge, nor shall you gather the gleanings after the harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God." It's really interesting because I only heard recently this is the reason why Compassion have a blue little square in their logo. Blue is symbolizes God's sovereignty, but it's a little square because it's to symbolize the idea of leaving a little bit left for the poor. It's 1/10 of a page in their symbol. And so I went, that's great, because that's what God is passionate about. Throughout all these laws, he's always looking out and having a heart for those who are poor, those who are in need, and those who really need help from others. So God provides, and he's in control. And so that's why he commands in his laws for Israel to be generous. Which leads us to our first point tonight. The first point from this story about Boaz and Ruth is that God is sovereign over every situation, and he works all things according to his plans and his purposes. Look at verse 3 again. "So Ruth went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz." Remember, Boaz was a very prominent man in the town. And in verse 3, he's of the clan Elimelech. And in chapter 4, he calls himself a brother of Naomi's deceased husband. But the way the Bible puts it, it says, "As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz." In the Hebrew, it literally says, "Her chance chanced upon the field of Boaz." It kind of sounds like dumb luck. The meaning of that chance upon a field, that the meaning is what happens to someone not through their own will or actions and without any known instigator. I reckon as we're reading Ruth, I reckon the writer knows that as we read this, we're thinking, there's something going on here, I'm not quite sure. I reckon it's a little bit like when you read Esther, where in the whole book, God is not mentioned once. But as you read, even though you can't see or hear God in the background, we can see God at work in all the details. I think that's what's going on here. That's exactly what the writer Ruth is doing. This is no coincidence that she finds Boaz's field, because when God is involved, there are no coincidences at play. God is working out all his little details. And this is really good to remind us that we have a sovereign God, and nothing that happens is by accident, because it's always being worked out by the plans and purposes of God. Now, John Piper has a really good quote to help us think through this. He says, "Life is not a straight line leading from one blessing to the next and finally to heaven. Life is a winding and troubled road, switchback after switchback. And the point of the biblical stories like Joseph and Job and Esther and Ruth here is to help us feel in our bones and not just know in our heads that God is for us in all these strange turns. God is not just showing up after the trouble and cleaning it up. He's plotting a course and managing the troubles with far-reaching purposes for our good and for the glory of Jesus Christ." Now, you might have heard we missed our fundraising target. God is still sovereign. And he has a plan and purpose for this church. Even though the plans don't seem like they're going to happen right now. It's my final day here at St. Paul's Castle Hill. And it might shock you to realize that Shane is only a few weeks behind me. God is still sovereign. And he loves this church. He calls you his bride, or Christ's bride. And he will look after this church, protect her, if only she will stay faithful to him. Maybe you're feeling that the hand of the Lord Almighty is working against you. Can I encourage you that God is still sovereign? And his promise is that he loves you and sustains you, even if your future seems distant and dim and dark. Remember what happens to Ruth here in the field. It happened, and it was not a coincidence, because God is involved, and when God's involved, there are no coincidences. This is reinforced in verse 4, the first part, where Boaz unexpectedly happens to come to the field and say hello. Once again, the sovereign hand of God is implicated. Although the narrator presents it subtly, it's for those who have eyes to see. The world attributes these kind of things to chance, the random events of complex universe that simply produce an occasional coincidence, but the eyes of faith are able to perceive the hand of God. I'll tell you a story about a church from North Carolina. In 1876, this church was struck by a hurricane and severely damaged. The people of the church came out the next couple of days and fixed that church up again. A couple of weeks later, it was struck again by a hurricane. The people came out, fixed the church again, but they thought, hang on a second, we've got to do something about this because this church is not in a great location. Let's find a better location for this church. So they went down, they hunted around, they found a plot of land they thought would be much safer to relocate the church to. They go to the owner and say, and give him a generous amount of money as an offer and say, please, can we buy this land for our church? The owner refuses. After a couple of weeks, there's another hurricane. This time, so severe, floodwaters lift the church off its moorings and it floated down the stream. When the floodwaters recede, the church is resting in that exact plot of land they tried to buy. So again, the church members go out to the owner and say, can we buy your land now? And again, the owner refuses. But he says, no, I will not take your money, but you can have the land because it's clear the Lord wants you to have it. Sometimes when we look at things, we look at our lives, we look at the world, we can only see the sovereign hand of God. And I've been reflecting a little bit on why the Lord is taking me and my family to Caringbah. I don't know exactly. I have an inkling. I suspect a few things. Maybe it's because you're better off without me. Or maybe it's because I'm better off without you. Either way, God is still sovereign. And God is working his sovereign will and purpose and plan through all these things, as much as we grieve leaving one another. God is still working through this. He is still protecting you, his church, and he is honoring his son, Jesus, in what is happening today and in the future. So the first thing is this: God is still sovereign. And it's by the sovereign hand of God that Boaz also notices Ruth. We look at verses 4 to 6. And we find that Boaz has also heard of Ruth and Naomi's story. And in verses 11 to 12, he's heard of the things Ruth has done for Naomi. Even though Ruth's husband has died and she doesn't need to come back to Bethlehem, he's heard how she's left her homeland. He's heard how she's loved and cared for her mother-in-law. He's heard how she's left a people to come to another land in a foreign country to live with her mother-in-law. And this leads us to our second point. God's kindness is expressed through the kindness that Boaz shows Ruth. And although God is sovereign, we see his love and his kindness and his generosity expressed in the way that Boaz shows it to Ruth. Look at the way the story unfolds from verse 8. So Boaz says to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. Down to verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come over here. Have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar. And when she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men. Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. And don't rebuke her. So Ruth gleaned in the field unto evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Now, even though she's a foreigner in Bethlehem, and even though she's a foreigner arriving in Bethlehem in the Wild West times of the Judges, and even though she's a foreigner arriving in the Wild West times after a severe famine, Boaz still showers Ruth with kindness. He insists that she gleans in his field. He insists that she not be treated as a beggar, but as a worker in her position, her protection, and her access to water. He insists that she shares his food, and he orders his men to leave out extra grain for her. So much so that she takes home around about 9 kilos of grain. I'll give you a bit of a lesson on the numbers here. An ephah is 1/10 of a homer. Okay? And a homer is 100 omers. But what's a homer? A homer is a donkey load. So a homer is 220 liters is what a donkey can carry. So when you see in the Bible a homer of food came or a homer was sacrificed, it's an ass load of food. So an ephah, 1/10 of a donkey load, 22 liters of grain she harvested, around about 9 kilos of barley. Anyway, I digressed. Where was I? So Ruth brings this back to her mother-in-law, and Naomi is wide-eyed in verse 19. Naomi asked her, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she'd been working. The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz, she said. The Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. That man is our close relative. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers, she added. Now there's great rejoicing in the household, the little household of Naomi and Ruth. But there's something worth stopping for in verse 20. Our English Bibles translates the word as kindness, but in the Hebrew the word is hesed. Hesed, there's no single English word that accurately conveys the meaning of this word. Hesed is about relationship and includes the notions of covenant loyalty, faithfulness, kindness, goodness, mercy, love, and compassion. And 2/3 of the word usage in the Old Testament of the word hesed are God's hesed towards human beings. So on the plain reading of what Naomi is saying is that God has not stopped showing his loyal love and his covenant faithfulness, his goodness and compassion to the clan of Elimelech, both living and dead. That's what she's saying. But when we go back to verse 20, we've got to recognize that even though God has been pouring his hesed love onto Ruth and Naomi, we ask ourselves the questions, how did God actually show his loyal love here? God's hesed love to Ruth and Naomi is extended through Boaz. How did the Lord care for Boaz? How did the Lord care for Ruth? It was through Boaz. How did Ruth receive favor? It was through Boaz. How did Ruth receive comfort and kind words? It was through Boaz. And it was through Boaz's hesed that somehow transforms a very ordinary lunchtime meal of roasted grain, bread, and wine vinegar. It transforms that ordinary meal into another demonstration of God's compassion and generosity towards her. For God, who through his hesed love works through the kindness of Boaz to bless and save Ruth and Naomi. So soon, Boaz would redeem Elimelech's land as a kinsman redeemer. Soon, Boaz would marry Ruth. And soon, they would bear a son who would become the grandfather of King David. And you'll hear more about chapters 3 and 4 next week. And ultimately, 1,000 years after all this has happened, in that same town of Bethlehem, God would again work his hesed love by bringing into the world his only son, Jesus Christ. Look how it all wraps up in verse 21. Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. God shows his loyal love through people like Ruth, people like Boaz, people like you and people like me. But few of us would actually own fields. Few of us would have fields to allow destitute people to harvest right to the edges. And few of us would have foreign widows gleaning in the fields we don't own. So few of us would have an opportunity to do hesed in exactly the same manner as we see in Ruth chapter 2. However, the ways in which we can manifest love and kindness and generosity and compassion are all around us. We've just got to do it. All around us in our homes or in our schools or in our universities or our workplaces or even this church. The hesed that Boaz does is a reflection of the type of hesed that God shows us. So it's through the doing of hesed love that people will know that we together are disciples of Jesus Christ if we love one to the other, as Jesus says in John chapter 13, verse 35. And that's why I reckon that Ruth is probably in our Bibles. One of the reasons that in spite of the time being of the judges where all Israel acted wickedly and did as they pleased, there was still one man and one woman and one family who would be used by God and who would express God's love and kindness to one another and to other people. And the message is that even though we live in a world that is selfish and individualistic and celebrity worshipping, even though we live in that world, we can still express God's love and kindness and generosity and compassion to one another as well. Now, in just a few moments, I'm going to step down from this pulpit, probably never again to speak to you from this pulpit. Unless, as John mentioned, unless as I mentioned to John, they make me a bishop, which I'm pretty sure they won't. I want to say that I've really had a great time here at this church the last 8 years. I've really loved and I've really appreciated the time being your minister. Now, Viv and I and the boys have been welcomed and accepted by this whole church. We've experienced God's kindness in many different ways through your kindness to me. And we've done some great ministry together as well. And I describe it as some deeply satisfying, God-honoring ministry that we've done together. And for that, I'm thankful to you and to God. But have you ever wondered what this church would be like if we all loved one another, truly loved one another, not just liked each other, not just put up with each other, not just, you know, sat next to each other wishing there was another seat between us? Imagine what it would be like if we loved one another in the way that Boaz was kind to Ruth. I reckon that if we truly have God's hesed love and faithfulness and mercy and compassion and kindness expressed in and through one another, to each other, this church would be absolutely, completely full to the brim. Packed to the rafters. Stuffed, completely full of people. People waiting halfway down, queued up down Old Northern Road just to get in. Get into a packed, uncomfortable, full building. I'd say people will be talking about you Christians at St. Paul's Castle Hill, and I say how you loved them. They'll tell me about how you cared for them. They'll tell me about how you spoke of Jesus to them, who speaks tender mercies and lifts their burdens and brings them peace. Now, Victor Hugo once wrote, "A home is built of loving deeds that stand 1,000 years. So it is with a church. A church is built of loving deeds that stand 1,000 years. I'd even leave Caringbah to come back to a church like that. A church who, in spite of all her power, in spite of all our technology and all our cleverness, would not be ashamed of our sovereign God, who chooses to save sinners through the simple speaking of the gospel of Jesus. A church who loves God and loves others. A church who is kind as God is kind. A church who is compassionate and generous and caring as God is compassionate and gentle and caring." So my thing I want to say to you in the last 10 seconds before they cut my mic, be a church that prays for our sovereign God to act and work alongside of him. And be a church that loves others as God loves us.